Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walters.
I'm Scott Bauer.
This is Rewind, a look at this week in the Capitol in politics. I want to thank Scott Bauer of the Associated Press for sitting in for the vacationing JR. How many years in the Capitol, my friend?
12.
Just 12.
Just
okay.
12.
You're ready. Wisai was there. And first, we have the redistricting press conference the next day in the Capitol. The Democracy Campaign leader, Matt Rothschild, led it. You have Jim Sensenbrenner in a town hall asked about funding the border wall, and Andy Gronick, his final gesture at the state Democratic convention, kind of is the way that he might have said goodbye this week to the gubernatorial campaign. Wish I was there.
We not only need fair maps as the end product, we need fair maps procedurally. We need a democratic, open, transparent process. It's the people's business. It's their constitutional duty to draw maps after the census. Did they do the people's business in this building, the people's building? No. They scurried across the street to the glass bank in the private cushy law offices of Michael Best and Friedrich. Democrats surely weren't allowed in the locked map room. And Republican elected officials, legislators here who were not in leadership, weren't allowed into the locked map room unless they got permission from one of the young aides who held the keys to the locked map room. They couldn't look at the statewide map. They could only look at their own redistricted district. And before they were allowed to leave the locked map room, they had to sign an oath of secrecy.
I'm just wondering, with you being in the U.S. Congress, how much money has he gotten from Mexico? And what are his plans to get more money to build this wall?
It's been appropriated. It was $1.6 billion. What Trump intends to do is use the NAFTA renegotiations as a way to get the Mexicans to pay for the wall. And those renegotiations are currently going on.
What if these changes never happen? As an American taxpayer,
if NAFTA is allowed to expire, then we go to the higher tariffs before NAFTA. There will definitely be less trade and definitely be fewer jobs. And there will be higher tariffs on the importation of Mexican goods.
I'll close on presents with something that we just recently began to do. On a weekly basis, we are sending out an email to every one of our 40,000 employees talking about the importance of presents, because presence matters. The husband in this photo has just decided, he, his wife, and family have decided that he's going into hospice. And his wife, to whom he's been married for 73 years, has a hearing deficit. And while he was in the hospital receiving care, had a broken hearing aid, and she couldn't hear her husband for the first time in 73 years. One of our caregivers ingeniously found a stethoscope and gave it to her. Her name is Mary, so that she could hear her husband for the remaining days of their life together, so he could say, I love you.
People everywhere, everywhere tell me, I do not think I'm going to make it.
Please welcome to the stage, Josh Paid.
Scott, when I started this year, I thought the U.S. Supreme Court ruling on redistricting might be the political story of the year. Boy, was I wrong. Does the term punt come to mind?
Sure.
Is it fair?
It could have been the political story of the year. It still is, because we don't have an outcome, right? But it was in the most layman's term possible, it was a punt.
Yeah. Okay, let's look at what the lawyer said first. Case about group political interests, not individual legal rights. This court is not responsible for vindicating generalized partisan preferences. That's Chief Justice and the court majority ruling on standing. But I was also intrigued by Rick Essenberg's. He likes the punt analogy, just one sentence. The court made clear that an individual's claim of vote dilution cannot be based on the fact that maps have been drawn in a way that diminishes the statewide prospects for that voter's preferred political party. Trust me, that's the longest quote I'll read during the show. So The issue here is technical, and it's standing, and it sent it back to, as we'll see, the three-judge court. Mm-hmm. I didn't see this one coming, did you?
I mean, there had been people saying that standing could potentially be an issue because they didn't have plaintiffs in every affected district in the state a party to the lawsuit. Yeah. So it had been out there as a possibility. They didn't talk about it publicly a whole lot. You know, the interesting thing is as this now goes back and they try to establish standing, which yes. I think we might talk about, yeah. Meanwhile, you've got a case in North Carolina that the court could decide on Monday whether they're taking or not. That's primed and ready, has standing.
Is that more squarely on the merits, you've been told?
Right, and it would be the same, you know, partisan gerrymandering question that could leapfrog the Wisconsin case and get decided potentially before this one makes its way back up to the Supreme Court. So that's kind of the next thing to keep your eye on is whether they take that North Carolina case.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now let's look to some plaintiffs in this case. The reaction from retired Professor Whitford, who was one of the lead plaintiffs. The encouraging part is we have a roadmap forward, but then you have the Director of Fair Elections. This is definitely not the end of the road. There is no vindication for the state's rigging of the maps and disenfranchising of our voters here. Our democracy is threatened, and we need to return the power to the people. Your reaction to these quotes, are they...
There is a roadmap on standing, right? I mean, they provide a couple different paths to get to where they need to be. It's not the end of the road to the case. It's definitely not the end of the road to the issue. I mean, the other thing you saw happen on Monday was Democrats coming out and saying, you know, we're going to talk about the need for nonpartisan redistricting reform. We're going to make this a campaign issue. Right. We're going to, you know, our candidates are going to be advocating for that, maybe more loudly than they had planned to or had in the past. So the issue itself is obviously not going away. Kind of the bigger picture is, you know, you have an election in November, and then in 2020, you have the last election before the next round of redistricting.
Well, I'm glad you got there, because that really shows that we have now status quo in Wisconsin through the 2018 and potentially through the 2020 elections. Mm-hmm. So nothing big changes. Now, notice I didn't pick any reactions from Speaker Voss, Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, because they both said, hey, we followed the law, and this ruling exonerates us, correct?
Right.
And then, as you said, you had Democratic leaders Hintz and Schilling said, look, this points up the need for the legislature to act.
Right.
But who's going to run the ledge in January?
Right. And so, I mean, we're going to have the election this year. We'll elect people to the state Senate who will be in office in 2021. The assembly will have to go through another round where everybody's up.
Yep.
Obviously, if you win this year, it'd be easier to be run as an incumbent. Yeah. But the question will be, should Democrats, you know, in the unlikely event that they would gain enough seats to have the majority of both the Assembly and the Senate, would they enact nonpartisan redistricting reform as they're running on, right. Or would they say, well, now we're in power and we're going to be the ones to draw the map?
It's very interesting. And you had a good idea to check with David Cannon at the UW-Madison. So I asked him, what happens next? And he gave me this scenario. First, a new trial before a three-judge panel in Western District of Wisconsin. Plaintiffs will have to either be recruited in all 99 districts, there's that standing question, or in districts affected the most by the partisan gerrymander, and then plaintiffs will have to provide district-by-district evidence of how they were harmed by the gerrymander or have standing to sue, or, Professor Cannon said, the plaintiffs could shift their argument from the 14th Amendment equal protection that was not decided on Monday, mm-hmm. or to the First Amendment political association argument, which Justice Kagan threw out as a possibility.
Right.
And did you read the same analysis that maybe she was trying to appeal to Justice Kennedy on this?
Yeah, so Justice Kagan did put out that argument. I think the attorneys, the plaintiff's attorneys had a news conference that morning, and they were asked, you know, which avenue do you think you're going to pursue? Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously they're evaluating it, but it would seem to me, and one of the things they said is they may not need 99 different people. They may need, you know, enough people to, because if you redraw one district, it's going to affect the others. So right. You may need like 20 or so right. to where every district is affected just by these 20 people when you start to redraw their boundaries. Obviously, that's something they're looking into and trying to figure out. The Kagan argument, where you could potentially have, say, the Wisconsin Democratic Party come in and say, you know, we are coming in as the group. I've talked to some
arguing for First Amendment.
Right. And I've talked to some people who seem to think that may not be the route they go down. And I don't know if they could concurrently try to do that in addition to bringing the other people for standing. That's part of what we're going to find out here.
All this will take years. Fair statement?
Boy, I don't know, Steve. I mean, they don't want it to take years. That's a really tough one to assess.
Well, if the Democrats took the state Senate in November, then they would probably, well, you have a pledge from Senator Schilling. We'll offer something on redistricting, but depending on the next governor and who controls the assembly, we don't know whether this legislature can act on redistricting apart from the courts.
Well, and we also have the governor election. So whoever wins in November will be the governor for the next round, you know, barring a resignation, will be the governor for the next round of redistricting. So if a Democrat were to win, even if the legislature would remain Republican, he or she would have veto authority over those maps. So
right. So I want to apologize for thinking this may have been the biggest political story of the year because it was a punt. But now let's go to the MU poll, Mr. Franklin's poll. He polled on 10 Democrats, but that sound you and I hearing are Democrats dropping. First Mr. Gronick and now Mr. Wachs. But now let's walk through what Charles Franklin said. Okay, Mr. Evers, 25%, Flynn, McCabe, Soglin, 7, Vinehout, 5, Mitchell, 4, Gronick, 4, Royce, 2, Wachs, 2, but undecided, 1 in 3, 9 percentage points higher than Mr. Evers. How do you see this thing?
I think a couple things in your graphic shows that you need to take into account the error rate here is really high.
Yes.
6.4%. So essentially, the 9 candidates are all within the error rate. So the numbers, the difference from 2 to 7% is really inconsequential on this. So what you have is Tony Evers as a clear front runner, everybody else, and 34% undecided. Yeah. So I think what Gronick and Wachs looked at is, you know, how do we get where we need to be to win this thing? And they came to the conclusion they can't get there. Whether the other 7 think that they can get what they need, get these undecideds to be able to compete with Evers, I mean, that's the calculation they're going through right now. And we have, 7 weeks till the primary? Six weeks?
Yeah, we are less than 2 months away. Mm-hmm. I was struck, Scott, by a line in Mr. Gronick's statement. There are lots of people sitting on the bench, confused by the large field of candidates, and waiting to see what happens in the primary. I don't think that's a winning strategy. However, he didn't endorse anybody. He said, I will endorse, whereas Dana Wachs, who got out of the race this morning, said, I support Tony Evers. He's won statewide 3 times.
Right.
Well, Mr. Gronick only had 4%, so in his endorsement, what questionable effect. And Mr. Wachs had 2% in the Franklin poll. Questionable to say I like Tony?
I mean, I'm not sure that when anybody drops out of a race and endorses someone that all their followers say, well, now he's told me who to go support, so I'm going to follow that person. I think what it does is add to the narrative of who is the front runner. Mm-hmm. And you've got Wachs adding to that narrative today by saying, I'm endorsing Tony Evers. You've got Gronick not endorsing, but referring to Tony Evers' lead in the poll in his decision to drop out. So it's kind of a quasi-endorsement or an acknowledgement that Tony Evers is out there. You've got Governor Walker, again this morning, tweeting about Tony Evers, as he has in the past. He hasn't really, other than a few kind of good-natured barbs at Soglin.
So which of the issues did the governor pick on in his morning tweet? Because I didn't see it yet.
The theme for the week for Governor Walker was, I'm an education governor.
Yes.
And he put out a new ad on that theme on Monday, and he was hitting on that theme before Dana Wachs dropped out this morning, tweeting about, I'm an education governor, and one of the candidates running for governor praised my budget before he started criticizing it in a reference to Tony Evers.
Yeah.
So, and he's engaged with Evers previously on Twitter. And like I said, he did a little here and there on Paul Soglin, kind of good-natured, love Fidel Castro kind of things. But, really nobody else is Walker kind of engaged in that way, which I think it shows that Evers is, at least in his mind, someone to pay attention to.
I was always struck by the regional issues. Mr. Gronick is from Milwaukee, did not endorse fellow Milwaukeean Matt Flynn. And Wachs is a representative in the district of Senator Vinehout. No endorsement for Senator Vinehout. Mm-hmm. So, okay. They also did the head-to-head. The MU poll did the head-to-head. We're now showing it. I want to make one point. I checked with the Elections Commission. You probably did, too. All of the names are Mr. Gronick and Walks are going to still be on the ballot. Right. In fact, Gronick's going to be number one.
Right.
I think Walks is going to be number 10. Mm-hmm. So without going down through each of these, what strikes you about the head-to-heads here?
I mean, again, I think we proceed with caution on these and look at that error rate.
Thank you. The
margin of error. Because we haven't gone through all of these, but they're either at the margin or really close to the margin. So that's point number one. The other point is, I don't think these numbers, having not gone back and looked at the prior two elections, I would guess that these are all pretty comparable to where Walker was at this point against his Democratic opponent in the other races.
Yeah.
And again, to refer back to the other question, you've got a third of the Democratic primary voters saying they don't know who they're going to support.
Yeah.
So I think conventional wisdom would tell you that coming out of the primary, the Democrat is going to be a few points behind Walker, and it's going to come down to the same thing it always does, it seems, with him, is who can capture the independent voter in the middle to get enough to get over the top. And Walker's going to be at 45-47%. Democrat's going to be somewhere around there. And where's it going to shake
out? Well, I want to land on that because we don't have a graphic, but you and I read the MU poll. The governor's popularity slipped up slightly, two percentage points, 49-47. Mm-hmm. In March, it was 47-47, which I'm going to make the point that 49 isn't 50.
Mm-hmm.
And in none of these head-to-heads does the governor hit 50. Now, it's a long way between that now and November 6th, point one. Point two, when you look at the anti-Walker base, let's compare Soglin, 34%, and another 35%, I misspoke. So the anti-Walker base appears between 35% and 44%.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to, it just struck me, do you think it's an anomaly that the closest head-to-head here is Governor Walker and Mike McCabe? Because that caused my graying eyebrows to raise.
Sure. I mean, again, it's, you're talking about one point here or there with an error rate of 5.6%.
Good point.
So I don't think you can get too deep into the weeds on these numbers to draw too much from it. That said, Mike McCabe is running a campaign that's kind of Bernie Sanders-esque. He's appealing to the progressive grassroots part of the party. So maybe those folks are more, ginned up than other people might be. I don't know, but it's,
And what are you going to look for in the July Charles Franklin poll? I'm going to look for whether the exit of Walks, Gronick, anybody else gets out, sizably bumps up Evers, right?
Sure. And you're that much closer to the primary, and maybe folks are starting to pay a little more attention, and maybe that 34% number shrinks a little bit.
Okay, let's pick out one other set of numbers from the Charles Franklin poll. Kevin Nicholson leads Vukmir among Republicans likely to vote, 37-32, yet 30% undecided. Nicholson is so new. How did he beat someone who's been a part of Capitol politics and Senator Vukmir, Assembly to Senate, Assistant Senate Majority Leader, in such a short time?
Well, two points, not to sound like a broken record, but the error rate is 6.9%.
I concede that. Thank you.
So they're within the margin of error. But to your point, how is he getting the support he is? Well, there are, I don't know what the most recent count, but several million dollars worth of TV ads supporting Kevin Nicholson and radio.
From the Elon family.
That have been going on now for months, filling the airwaves with ads about him. Leah Vukmir has had a little bit from her super PAC, but not anywhere near what Kevin Nicholson has had. So that has definitely put his name out there. And, even if you're the assistant Senate Majority Leader from Brookfield, most people in the state have no idea who you are.
True.
I mean, even though if you've been in the legislature for a number of years.
Well, I think Franklin's poll then, didn't it focus on the number of people who said they were undecided, didn't have enough information?
Mm-hmm.
In the U.S. Senate race, it'll be decided November 6th. But Senator Vukmir out with a controversial ad. This is her, a handgun, and a cross and a stern look on her face. Ever have someone threaten your life for what you believe in? I have, when Scott Walker and I beat the union bosses, cut billions in taxes into funded Planned Parenthood. The left couldn't take it. With President Trump, we can do the same in Washington. I'm calling this Senator Buttigieg's Make My Day ad. What are your thoughts on this?
A couple things stand out. It's her first ad. She, as she has throughout the campaign, ties herself very closely with Governor Walker, tapping into that base of support in the state, referring back to Act 10, a very popular policy position for Republicans in a primary election, kind of reminding people that she went through that, was there with the governor. Also referring to President Trump, addressing the question that some primary voters may have as to who is more aligned with the president, her or Kevin Nicholson. She did endorse Trump, but not until after Walker and I think Marco Rubio. She had endorsed two others before she got around to Trump. So there's those questions out there. And then lastly, choosing to go with this message of I've had my life threatened, I've got a handgun here, which she doesn't refer to, but obviously, it's there.
It's looming large.
Right. So I think she's trying to show, she's running against a Marine who won a Bronze Star.
Well, Kevin's slogan is, you see it on the billboard, send in the Marine.
Right.
And his campaign uses pictures of him serving in the military as a Marine. So is this her way of saying, I've got a gun too?
Well, there is a gun there.
Yeah.
So she is saying that, and I think it's her way of saying I'm tough.
Right. And then we're not going to dwell on it, but the head-to-head Baldwin versus Nicholson and Baldwin versus Buttigieg, Senator Baldwin had, a 10 percentage point lead over both?
Yeah, so, again, it brings up that question that insiders will talk about a lot. Can Baldwin and Walker both win? Can a Democrat and a Republican both at the top of the ticket, however you want to decide it, two statewide elections, can they split and win?
Okay.
I think you're going to continue hearing people ask about that.
If Mr. Franklin pulled on Attorney General Schimmel versus the Democratic opponent, I missed it. Did he?
I can't recall.
I don't think he did. Okay. Moving on. This week, the governor said in April, I'm willing to send our National Guard troops to the border with Mexico, but they didn't leave until this week. 24, and you and I watched the news segment in which a guard officer said, and we expect more to go. The guard members will help border agents and soldiers from other states, but the deployment came before the president's executive order saying we're going to no longer separate children from parents who crossed illegally. Mm-hmm. So the criticism came, let's quote Congressman Mark Pocan, the governor's plan to send guard members to the southern border is a misuse of state and federal resources. Walker's committed to disrupting the lives of service members so they can complete mundane tasks, to which the governor's press secretary, guard troops are on administrative assignments. If you have a problem with this, you should contact your federal lawmakers. Is this a big issue for the governor, do you think?
Well, it's one that gets his opponents worked up, certainly. And he, subsequent to this, his spokeswoman put out a statement with the governor saying this is a federal issue for federal. The question of separating is a federal issue, kind of mirroring what she says here. I think the governor is fulfilling his commitment that he had made in April and also trying to distance himself from the hottest political issue of the week nationally.
Yeah. Okay. And where he's in the middle of that. Last Friday, a week ago, after we taped the last show, the elections panel said they're going to mail out 384,000 cards to unregistered adults, 1 in 11 adults. And these postcards will be sent to adults with driver's licenses or state IDs but not registered to vote. This is down from 1.2 million postcards mailed in 2016. The reason that I think it's important is because of the Ohio U.S. Supreme Court decision. Which you want to talk about that a bit on the purge?
Steve, I'm not that familiar with
it. I understand. They said if I'm summarizing here, and neither one of us are lawyers.
Oh, you can remove their if they haven't voted in the past election and they haven't re-registered, then you can remove the
yes.
Right. So I think that'll be. I think you might see a bill here to do something similar now that the Supreme Court has given approval to that kind of removal.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if you saw that next
session. You had an Ohio voter who didn't vote, was sent a postcard, mm-hmm. and he said, I was illegally bumped, and this violates my rights. The U.S. Supreme Court said, if you have not returned the postcard, the state of Ohio has a right to purge you. So it's just a...
And I don't think Ohio has same-day voter registration. I can't recall if they do or not. And I think that provides a little bit of a wrinkle here, because you could always show up, even if you're purged here, you could show up to vote and register, potentially.
Right.
I'm sure you'll hear, you know, if there's a bill, we'll hear all about that and everything else as they look at it.
I want to circle back to Tony Evers' campaign. And I want your impressions of the new ad in which former Walker Corrections Secretary Ed Wall said, we went to the governor's chief of staff, asked him to address the Lincoln Hills problem, and we're told the governor's having problem raising money. This is Mr. Wall's version. And it's there's a really very telling line in there that I thought the governor would want to protect children, and he didn't. I'm Ed Wall. I support Tony Evers. Pretty damaging ad, do you think?
That's another development that happened within minutes of Andy Gronick announcing he was dropping out yesterday. It's a web-only ad at this point. I'm sure we'll see some version of it on TV before the campaign's over. Steve, you've been around a lot longer than I have. Can you ever recall a cabinet secretary for the incumbent governor, current or former cabinet secretary, endorsing his opponent in the in a race?
No, I cannot.
So that's the dynamic. The other important piece of context is Ed Wall is disgruntled by every measure, has said many of these things publicly before about Scott Walker.
Including in a, I think he's written a book.
His book's coming out in August. He was fired by the Department of Justice 2 months after he quit as prison chief. So he's got a lot of axes to grind. It's not surprising that he would come out and publicly criticize the governor.
Right.
It is surprising to me that he would endorse a Democratic candidate. But, you know, everything that he said about Walker, they have vehemently denied.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Well, the governor's press secretary, Amy Hassenberg, what'd she say? That what Mr. Wall asserts in his Evers ad is, quote, blatantly false.
Right.
And this is someone who was fired for trying to destroy, for asking a state employee, I think this is a quote, asking a state employee to destroy public records.
But here's the thing, Steve. 60 or whatever, 34% of people don't know who these candidates are. Yeah. They turn the TV on and they see an ad. At some point, I'm guessing, will be on TV, and they see an ad with a department secretary, former, saying, I worked for Scott Walker. He did these things. I'm endorsing Tony Evers. You know, for them to parse out all the context of that is maybe not going to happen. They're going to see that ad, and it could be a very effective ad.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Looking ahead, we saw the Charles Rankin poll come out, and immediately Mr. Gronick and Mr. Walks dropped. Do you think we'll see others?
Well, there's another poll, you know, in a month. The candidates in the minutes before the taping here who are remaining are all saying they're in it to win it. They're in it to go. So we'll see.
Yeah, very good. Quite a week in the Capitol.
It was indeed.
I'm Steve Walters.
I'm Scott Bauer.
I want to thank Scott from the Associated Press for sitting in for JR. That's Rewind for June 22nd.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.